Welcome to It's About Florida, a weekly discussion program tackling the key issues and topics of interest to our state. I'm Tramell Gomes. Now that President Barack Obama's health care overhaul was upheld by the U.S. Supreme Court, Florida Governor Rick Scott says the state will do nothing to comply with the optional portions of the law, like expanding Florida's Medicaid program. He also said the state will not set up a health exchange, which is sort of like a marketplace for people to go shopping for insurance policies. Governor Scott has long said Obamacare is too costly for Florida, and the cost varies depending on who you ask. To help break down the impact of the Affordable Care Act, I've assembled two people who've been tracking the law very closely. Ann Swerlick with Florida Legal Services and Florida State University professor Marshall Kapp. So welcome to the program. We're looking at the Affordable Care Act. The news came down. Everyone's been waiting for a long time to see what the decision would be, and we got the decision. So name what you do and what do you think about the ruling?
My name's Ann Swerlick, and I'm the Deputy Director for Advocacy at Florida Legal Services, which is a state support center for legal aid offices around the state. And we were all very pleased that the court upheld the act. Our legal aid focus is particularly on low-income people, and the opportunity to provide health insurance coverage for those Floridians in Florida who don't have access right now is historic, and I really hope we're able to take advantage of it. It will help a lot of people.
All right.
I'm Marshall Kapp. I'm the director of the Center for Innovative Collaboration in Medicine and Law at Florida State University, and that's a joint effort of the College of Medicine and the College of Law at Florida State. And as a lawyer, I have mixed feelings about the reasoning behind the court's decision, but we do have a decision. And there is other litigation still pending regarding other parts of the Affordable Care Act, and we ought to remember that. But for now, at least, we do have a decision, and our attention ought to be on the policy wisdom of the act and how well it will or will not work in practice.
So Florida and more than 20 other states had sued to get the law overturned. Refresh our memory. Why did Congress pass this law in the first place?
Well, I think there are three things we want out of our healthcare system. We want people to have access to it. We want it to deliver high-quality care. And we want it to be affordable. And I think there's a widespread feeling, probably almost a unanimous feeling, that our current system doesn't do a very good job of achieving those three goals, certainly not simultaneously. So at least originally, the impetus behind doing something in the realm of health legislation was to address those three concerns: access, affordability, and quality. And of course, the debate now is about how well the act is going to do that in its implementation.
How big is the uninsured an issue in America?
Well, I think, you know, stepping back again to your question about why did we feel the need to pass this legislation, we have a shameful crisis in this country. There's all kinds of indisputable data that thousands of Americans and Floridians die every year prematurely, unnecessarily, because they can't access health care. And we are an outlier in that respect among other developed nations. And so I think we can't forget that as we go forward and try to figure out, okay, now we have the decision. You know, we still have this very pressing problem on the table. And in Florida, we have one of the highest uninsured rates in the country. I believe it's over 3 million. And so I think, again, we have this historic opportunity to try to address that problem.
So what are the consequences of having that many people without insurance in the country?
Well, you know, as was just indicated, there are health consequences. Now, we have to, you know, we have to kind of separate out access to healthcare services. In other words, insurance, who has insurance, that's one issue. Whether that insurance actually translates into access to services is another question, and that's one that you know, the Affordable Care Act, it remains to be seen how good a job it does in translating insurance coverage into access. And then the third big issue is the real goal of our healthcare system is to improve the health of people, to improve the health of the population. So we need to ask, even if people have better access to healthcare, is that being translated into better health for people?
So we have a goal.
So we have a goal. And I think the supposition of the Affordable Care Act is that we can move toward that goal, better health for the population, by providing people with insurance, which will translate into better access to healthcare services, which will translate into better health. But we're now in the midst of an experiment, and we'll see if that really works out.
With this overall goal, where does the fracture begin? Like, what are we seeing here? What's causing this disruption with this Affordable Care Act?
Well, one thing that one aspect of the decision that was sort of disappointing, particularly to people who represent Medicaid beneficiaries and uninsured poor people, is that the court found that the Medicaid expansion under the Act, which would expand Medicaid to all persons at or below 138% of poverty level, with some exceptions, but that was essentially unconstitutional. It was unconstitutionally coercive to require the states to do that. But the court, in order to uphold that provision of the Act, found that if they nullified that provision of the law that allows the Secretary of Health and Human Services to withhold current Medicaid funding from states, that if that provision was nullified, that the expansion provision could stand. So where that leaves us in Florida is that our policy makers and leaders have to make a decision about whether we should go forward with the Medicaid expansion. And, of course, there's been a huge amount of debate on that issue, and we're going to be working very hard to try to get Florida leadership to take advantage of this wonderful opportunity.
You're saying debate. Has there been debate, or is there like a decision has already been made by many of our state leaders? From what I'm seeing, it's like, no, we don't want to participate in any optional portions of this.
Right. Well, I think the governor's office and the governor has been vocal on this. I think legislative leadership is still looking at these issues. You know, it's pretty hard to walk away from 3 years of total federal financial assistance to make this expansion happen between the years of 2014 and 2016. And then, of course, the federal assistance still is incredibly unprecedentedly high. It will be phased down to 90%. Over the decade, and that's still an incredibly high rate of assistance to the state to take care of this crisis.
Mm-hmm. What do you make of seeing our state leaders, the governor's office, and everyone? And Florida was actually the leader against this law. So after it's passed, you see the ruling that it's constitutional, and still they're saying that they will not. They don't have any interest in participating in even the optional portions of this and still fighting against it.
Well, I mean, you ask what's the hubbub, what's the, you know, why are people disagreeing? I mean, I would argue that there's pretty good agreement about the goals that we ought to be pursuing. The disagreement is about the methods of reaching those goals. And I think it's a hard choice about whether to join in the Medicaid expansion. And I don't know how I would come out if I were in the governor's office. But I don't think it's illegitimate to be considering the impact, the financial impact on the states down the road when the state does become responsible for a portion of Medicaid expansion. To me, the bigger question is whether expanding Medicaid eligibility is the best way to provide access to quality care for people that don't have access to quality care now. The Medicaid program has a lot of problems to it, including a lot of access problems now. There are a lot of people today who have Medicaid cards who can't get very good access to healthcare providers, particularly primary care, dentists. It's a very serious situation. And so, to me, there's a real question about whether you improve access to quality care for people by expanding a very faulty system as opposed to coming up with a better system that, to my mind, ought to integrate everyone together so that there'd be no reason to discriminate against people who are stigmatized by being in this separate program for the poor that we call Medicaid.
Mm-hmm. Now that – does this mean everyone will be insured?
No. I mean, getting back, we're going to have a huge hole in coverage if the state does not go forward on the Medicaid expansion, because those individuals are not going to be able to purchase health insurance on the health exchanges, which we haven't talked about, but that would be
yet.
So that's going to be an ongoing issue for us. I think everyone would agree that their Medicaid's got some serious problems that need to be addressed, but some of it has been, in a way, self-fulfilling prophecy, because we've been sort of starving the system. One thing that the Affordable Care Act is going to do, whether Florida chooses the expansion or not, is that reimbursement rates to providers are going to be significantly increased, particularly for primary care and pediatricians, starting in 2013. And I think that's going to have a tremendous impact on the access problems that Dr. Kapp was talking about. In other states where reimbursement rates have been increased, it has significantly improved access for people. So that's one way to address some of those issues. Medicaid has, for all of its faults, first of all, has one of the lowest administrative expensive rates compared to private insurance and even Medicare. And I think it's very fiscally responsible in terms of the way services are managed.
You're listening to It's About Florida. I'm Tramell Gomes, chatting with Dr. Marshall Kapp, Director of the Center for Innovative Collaboration of Medicine and Law at Florida State University, and Ann Swerlick, Deputy Director for Advocacy at Florida Legal Services. We're looking at what the Supreme Court ruling on the federal health care law will mean for the Sunshine State.
So what happened to those already under private insurance plans with this law?
Well, there's a difference in predictions depending on who you talk to. And we don't know. I mean, it's speculation at this point. We will know. But, you asked a moment ago, are there still going to be people uninsured? And we talked about Medicaid, and that's very important. But we don't know about other people. The court upheld the constitutionality of the individual mandate, but we don't know how many people who are subject to the individual mandate are going to choose not to buy insurance and pay the penalty instead or evade the penalty by – and people don't really understand that the way that the penalty for the individual mandate is to be enforced is by deducting the amount of the penalty or actually tax. Now, the Supreme Court.
Let's give our listeners an understanding of what the individual mandate is. Like, what is it? And go into the discussion about the penalty.
The idea of the individual mandate is that if you fall in that category where you don't have government insurance and you don't have private insurance through employment, you would either have to purchase an insurance policy that would meet certain conditions, or you would pay something, and that something has now been determined to be a tax because that was the hook that the Supreme Court hung its hat on. Mm-hmm. And the way that would be enforced is it would be deducted from your income tax refund. And so anybody who can – first of all, almost half of the American population doesn't pay federal income tax. So this really would be unenforceable as to them. But even if you pay federal income tax, if you arrange your deductions in a way that you will not get a refund at the end of the year, there's nothing to deduct the tax from. So people speculate, and I think with some justification, that there are going to be people, that particularly the young, healthy people who don't use a lot of health care and who don't anticipate using a lot of health care, who are going as an economic matter, just decide I won't purchase. If the government can get the tax from me, that's fine. It's not that much. It's less than the cost of an insurance premium would be. And now with the guaranteed issue provision in the Affordable Care Act, which says insurance companies can't turn you down, which is in many respects a very good thing. But what that means is if I'm young and seemingly invincible, I can buy my health insurance as I'm being wheeled into the emergency room. Mm-hmm. The other aspect we don't know how many employers are going to drop their coverage and pay a penalty rather than incur the costs of buying insurance for their employees.
Why would an employer drop and not follow through on this?
Well, it's expensive to purchase insurance for your employees and their dependents. And the penalty that employers would have to pay for employers of over 50 full-time employees would have to pay if they don't carry insurance would in many, if not most cases, be much less than the cost of premiums. So you still may have employers for other reasons to remain competitive in getting and keeping good workers may choose to retain insurance, but some for economic reasons may choose not to.
All right. And Swerlick, so what parts of the law are already in place and what's coming down the pipeline?
Well, there's been millions of dollars actually that have already come into Florida under the Affordable Care Act, including some businesses are already getting rebates from their insurance companies under the Affordable Care Act. A new requirement is that insurance plans have to meet certain medical loss ratios, which basically means that they have to show a certain percentage of the premiums they collect for coverage is actually going directly for healthcare services rather than administrative costs. And if a small group insurer, for example, doesn't meet that 80% requirement, 80% of the premiums collected go for healthcare costs, then a rebate is provided to the employer. And those checks have already started flowing to businesses in Florida. Small businesses, which make up most of the employers in Florida, they are already able to get tax credits for providing health insurance when they've previously had uninsured employees. Young adults are able to stay on their parents' health insurance plans, their pre-existing condition prohibitions, and people who have not been able to get coverage because of pre-existing conditions have now been able to purchase through a special plan that's actually being in Florida being run by the federal government. You know, I think part of the problem with this law, it's very complicated. It was a political compromise. There's many ways where it can be better. It is, as stated, a grand experiment in some measure. And I think over time, it's going to have to be tweaked based on what we learn. But, you know, all of the great social programs we've started in this country have started out the same way, very controversial, lots of resistance. And now if you talk to people about Medicare or Social Security, they don't want to change that. You know, don't take that away from me. So I think, you know, this is the beginning of a long journey to address a problem that's not going away.
Governor Rick Scott, as we touched on earlier, says that the state cannot afford this. Is this true?
Well, you know, can we afford it? That's a value question. So my opinion isn't better than anybody else's on that. Is it – would compliance with the Affordable Care Act be very expensive for the state now and particularly in a few years? Yes. As I said before, I don't think considering the down-the-road cost implications – and by down the road, we're talking 3, 4, 5 years – cost implications to the state is at all illegitimate. Now, whether the concerns about the future costs to the state ought to drive the decision about whether we participate or not, whether we're willing to incur those costs and find a way to pay them, that's a, you know, that's a value question that that the populace has to decide.
We talked earlier about health insurance exchanges. Who qualifies for those?
Well, the lowest income people don't qualify, but people above 100% of the poverty level can qualify for those purchasing insurance for those exchanges, and people between 100 and 400% of poverty are eligible for subsidies, premium subsidies. So hopefully that will act as an incentive for people who previously may not have purchased insurance because of affordability issues. And then, of course, you know, everybody else above 400% of poverty can purchase on the exchange. Most people in Florida have insurance through their employers, and that's not going to change, except as stated, there might be some who decide to drop coverage. But, you know, for I think the most folks, nothing is going to change. But it's those 3.5 million or so who don't have anything right now. This opens up a new world of options.
State employees, what happens to their insurance under this law?
Well, I mean, we think that state employees will still have insurance through the state by virtue of our employment. I think that our premiums, total premiums will go up, and I think the portion of the premium that I will be expected to pay as an employee will go up. I think Why would they go up? I think total costs have to go up. If truly there are millions of people who are not getting good access to health care, and we're going to be successful in providing them with good access, that has to cost money. If it doesn't increase costs, then our supposition that they're not receiving health care must be wrong. So if you believe that there are people who aren't receiving access to good health care, and some of the savings will be, yes, you know, maybe people won't come to emergency rooms as much, although that has not been the case in Massachusetts, which is the forerunner of the federal a model. You know, if we're going to include people who may be very expensive because they have preconditions and they couldn't get coverage before, if we're going to include everybody, provide them with better access to health care, I think total health care costs have to go up.
All right. So, Ms. Swerlick, you mentioned this earlier. We've seen controversy surrounding many of the social programs in this country. And even though that the court has ruled that this is constitutional for now, will their decision stand? And we're already seeing calls to repeal this. So what will happen here?
I mean, I think we're going to have to wait until after the election to get an answer on that question. One thing for sure is the problems will still be there. And if the Affordable Care Act goes away, you know, there's no doubt that the uninsured numbers are going to increase. Costs will increase. I have to say on the notion that premiums might go up. I mean, there is some hope that premiums might go down because there's going to be some limits on the profit that insurance companies can make, which were not in effect previously.
Well, as we know, it's a complex issue, and there's so much more that we can get into. So as before we wrap up here, what are some of the most important facts that our listeners should know about this law as it stands now? Dr. Kapp and then Ms. Ann Swerlick.
Well, I'd say pay attention. Inform yourself. I think people are educable. I think that's sort of a basic philosophical divide and political divide in our system today is, you know, are people, ordinary people, capable of being educated and making their own good decisions with adequate information, or are they so dependent and vulnerable that they need to be protected, and particularly protected by the government making decisions for them? And I believe in the former. I believe that people are capable.
I think there's been a lot of scare and fear tactics going on around the law that for most people who are currently insured, not much is going to change for them. You know, they'll still be able to have their own doctors and get the health care benefits they've gotten previously. But for their friends and neighbors who have some catastrophe that befalls them, an accident, cancer, whatever it might be, who previously could not get help or get coverage, that there's going to be new options available for those people, and they could be life-saving. And that this is, I think, a first step in, like I said earlier, a journey to give people better health care.
All right. Well, thank you both for taking time out of your schedules to meet with me here on It's About Florida. I really appreciate it.
You're welcome.
Thank you.
Special thanks to Dr. Marshall Kapp with Florida State University and Ann Swerlick with Florida Legal Services. You've been listening to It's About Florida, a production of WFSU-FM. Our producer is Lynn Hatter with technical assistance provided by Taylor Cox. Please join us again next week for more discussions about the issues impacting our state. I'm Tremel Gomes.